The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. DraftKings brings you same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. You can download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VOXMMA. That's code VOXMMA for new customers to get 150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Oh, wait. My music disappeared. Oh, there it goes. No, not that music. Not that music.
Strong start.
Yeah.
Are we live, pal?
We are live, pal.
Hey, we're live, pal. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the A-Side Live Chat. I am, of course, your host, Jose Youngs, the rightful winner of this week's episode of Between the Links. But we can talk about that later because Jed and Casey, Jed, of course, spoiler alert, is...
Oh, no.
Champion. Oh, man. I guess this is just the A-Side Live Chat with Jed Mashir now. I'm sorry that you were anticipating coming to a much worse show and things just got a lot better for you.
Okay.
God, damn it.
The feedback from the gods were like, yes, Jose won. We'll give Jed a little more time to talk because his time in the spotlight is coming to an end. But you know what? Go watch this week's episode of Between the Links. After this, in that time frame between this episode of the A-Side and UFC Vegas 15 Media Day, go watch Between the Links with Mike Heck, and you can see what I'm talking about. Casey is very anti-everyone dying. And, well, he's very pro-everyone dying from this pandemic. Jed apparently doesn't believe this pandemic is a big deal because Fight Circus is all of the headlines. But I digress. Go watch this later. But, Jed, how's life down in the South?
You know, it's spectacular when you're coming off a big W like I am. Because sometimes we don't need to focus on the sad things, Jose. Sometimes we can just celebrate the stupid and the amazing, which is why we're all in the sport in the first place.
Right. So, to paraphrase, don't talk about the sad, talk about the stupid. Sounds like mixed martial arts. Casey, how's life in Englewood?
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
To paraphrase, it's a fart noise. All right. Yeah. Anyway, you guys know the drill. Jed, this is your first time on the A-Side, if I'm not mistaken. Were you on any other past iteration? Well,
nope.
Welcome.
This is my first thing, so thank you for having me.
Anytime, man. Well, if someone is going to have a Rochambeau leg-kicking contest and someone has to talk about it, you're the man to do it. So, anyway, hit us with the first question, Casey.
First question
from Jessica Crystal Cruz says, yay. Okay.
I agree. Yay.
Okay. Next question. This is technically a question.
Yo, what's up? Jed, you want to answer this one?
Say it like they typed it.
Say it. I say, Jose, yo. I need a little more. That's more that like old 7-Up commercial. What's up right there?
I think that was a Bud Light commercial.
Was it? Could be. I don't remember.
It was the frog one, wasn't it?
Yo,
the
frogs? Was up. Because they put a lot of S's. It should be a lot of A's because it's was up.
Ooh, yeah.
Fair. Okay. But, you know, nothing is up. We're here to talk about I'm here to talk about Fight Circus, and I guess maybe I'll have to throw my opinion about some other things as well.
Don't worry, Jed. If people don't talk about Fight Circus for whatever reason, we'll give you all the time in the world at the end to cut a promo. In fact, I won't even cut a promo. I'll give you my time to talk about it.
Oh, perfect. That's all I want to talk about Fight Circus. So I'm happy to talk about whatever before then. Valentina, Demetrius Johnson. Let's go. Some people are fighting this weekend, I think. We can talk about that.
Those are rumors. Rumors.
Those are big if true.
We have not got confirmation there's actually a UFC card this weekend. That's,
Oh, I was talking about the boxing.
Oh.
again, not whatever. There's a UFC. Cool. Have you guys heard? Mike Tyson is going to fight again. I'm pretty excited.
Cool. Is it a fight or an exhibition?
It's always a fight.
It's, you know, anytime they put on the gloves, you got to respect your opponent, even if you by rule aren't allowed to hurt them. Or get hurt yourself.
Skullduggery, I say. Casey, what is our third question?
I don't know what this question means, but it was written to you.
Jose, who's your favorite Akatsuki member? Well, they're asking that because I'm wearing an Akatsuki shirt from the hit anime series Naruto. I would probably have to say Madara or Pain. Obito's cool. Itachi's cool. Kabuto's cool, but I'd probably say Madara, but I feel like that's everyone's answer. So there's your answer. I could go into great detail, but no one cares, especially Jed and Casey. We could talk about it on another episode or weigh-in show.
We're all big Madara fans here.
Madara with an A.
Yeah.
Pain is Casey. Cool, too.
You know that?
Yeah.
Sharpen up.
The Akatsuki are the in this land, of course. You watched Avatar: The Last Airbender. Do you watch any sort of TV shows, Jed, that I can reference?
I mean, probably not. I'm not a huge television guy.
Neither am I. So, but I watch like a very small amount, so I'm trying to put this into words that I could explain to – I don't know. In Avatar, you know how they have all the lands, Casey? It's similar in Naruto, but they're villages, and they're not like very specific. Like, there's not like – earth and water and everything. They have very specific names, and all of these characters or ninjas have broken free from their duties to become like their own person, which is why Izzy is a big fan. If you see, he wears shirts like this a lot.
I've seen that shirt.
That's because really he is his own man.
All right.
I mean, it's just a good looking shirt. I don't need to know anything about the background to appreciate fine clothing.
Hey, man. So you need fashion advice, MMA fighting, come to me. You want to talk about tomfoolery, you go to Jed.
That's my brand, and I'm totally okay with it.
Next question.
From Joseph Bose, a longtime commenter in the YouTube comments. Valentina was -2,000 favorite to win versus Jennifer Maia. To me, she didn't fight like that at all. Did the pressure get to her of ESPN all week building the narrative that she didn't care about Maia? Jed, I would be remiss to say you're probably the biggest proponent of Valentina's skills on the site. I feel like to all of us, you can do no wrong inside the octagon, but you are by far the most vocal, so I'll let you lead this answer. Did, quote, the pressure get to Valentina Shevchenko ahead of her fight against Jennifer Maia?
So no is the answer to that. I think it's important to remember that fighters don't have any influence over the odds. Like, being a -2,000 favorite doesn't mean anything to the fighters. That's completely separate. And Valentina fought mostly like she always fights. So I think that saying the pressure got to her is really missing the point. I think Jennifer Maia was a little more prepared than most of us anticipated. But at the same time, Shevchenko won 4 rounds very clearly, was never at risk of losing the fight ever. I mean, it wasn't the dominant performance that kind of we thought, it wasn't the head kick KO that, you know, maybe they had been building. But I've mentioned this a ton about Shevchenko. I think her best analog is Anderson Silva. just because the way she fights, she is purely a counter fighter. She is only going to take what is given. And if you don't give her a lot to work with, she's just going to win. It might not be impressively. Or if you give her a lot to work with, she's going to style on you. Maya mostly didn't give her a lot to work with, and so she ended up winning the fight that she did. I certainly wasn't one of Shevchenko's best performances ever. I don't think anyone's here to claim that. But, I mean, she did what she needed to do. Everyone's going to have an off night every now and again. And if your off nights are you winning four rounds decisively and clearly retaining your title, you're doing something okay.
Do you think it has anything to do with the fact that did Jennifer Maia do anything well, or was it just Valentina? Yeah.
No, I think Maia clearly came in pretty schooled to what she thought was a good game plan. She wanted to crowd her and sort of match physicality with her. You talked about this on BTL this week. You know, Maia was much stronger than I think most of Shevchenko's opponents have been. And in that second round that she, I think, pretty clearly won, she used that physicality a lot to kind of neuter what Shevchenko could do. Now, again, Maia didn't work her over or really dominate her or kind of pile up damage, but she did control her. And I think that was her a large portion of her game plan coming in was to cut the cage off or clinch grappling. And it worked for a little bit. Shevchenko had to adjust, and she did as it kind of developed. But yeah, in general, I think you should rarely ever take something or blame the winning fighter or the champion. You should always give credit to the challenger because they're giving looks that are making the champion not get to do their favorite things.
Well said. Well said. Casey, you train. So you've obviously – you watch fights probably a little different than we do. Do you think Jennifer Maia put any sort of blueprint out for how a path to victory over Valentina could possibly be?
Yeah, you have to hold her down. I mean, I don't think there's a 25er that can match her for 25 minutes in the stand-up at 125. And hopefully you can just score three rounds on her out of five and just, you know, maybe Valentino just, I don't want to say be lazy, but just give away rounds and not take any damage. I mean, I think when Valentina does lose, it'll be like, If Maia was able to do that two more times, where Shevchenko would lose the decision, but yet not have one bruise on her face, and probably her opponent was all beat up. I think that was Maya's path to victory, and she got one third of the way there. That's about it.
Yeah, she stopped at step one.
Yeah, I guess I'm a weirdo because I thought that was a decent performance from Valentina and a really good performance from Maia. And that's what you got. You still got a 4-1 dominant victory for Shevchenko. I don't really see the narrative of Valentina look bad or I don't know. I just I thought
this was bad. But
was this similar to the
questionable tactics?
Well, we also learned about her knee injury that she said she had surgery. So if you're going to do a primarily grappling match and she just didn't want her knee to blow out during any of the stand-up, if you take it grapple, it's less likely your knee is gonna slip. Or I mean, I have a torn MCL or ACL, one of those, like where one side is messed up, so every once in a while when I'm standing, you know, if I go a lateral movement, it will just slip. And I can see why she just didn't want to take that risk.
Sure.
So going off of Jed's comparison to Anderson Silva, this was sort of not in terms of excitement or dominance, but the path to victory is what Chael Sonnen did to Anderson. Just got to hold him down and control him on the ground for so long. So continue on that narrative. Go ahead.
Was Shevchenko Maia equivalent to Anderson Silva versus maybe Leches? Tadas Leches?
Not bad, honestly.
I'm sorry?
Yeah.
That's not a bad comparison.
Yeah, around there. It's just going to be one of those fights that in her reign that we're not.
Everyone has a bad fight. Like, even people forget John Jones' fight against Ovince St. Preux happened too. You're not going to blow everyone out of the water every time.
Yeah.
All right. Next question. Thank you, Mr. Boza.
From Lessick, is that an I or an L?
Yeah, Lessick.
Lessick on the site Tony versus Oliveira, a non-title fight? Question mark. Habib will not be the lightweight GOAT until he beats all, at least a grappler. Until he at least beats a grappler. He has fought only favorable stylistic matches for him, and his record is very padded. Okay. I cannot believe he is number one pound for pound. So this is a weird question for me. Casey, we'll start with you. We'll start with you. A, there's a few things to unpack from this question. Can Habib really be considered the lightweight GOAT until he beats a grappler? Has he only fought favorable stylistic matchup? And can you believe he is number one pound for pound?
Yes. It's like, all right, so the first question,
said he cannot be the lightweight GOAT until he beats a grappler.
No, what does that mean? That he has to win a submission underground? This is mixed martial arts. I don't understand. He's 29-0. He hasn't fought one. He hasn't fought one person that understands any grappling. I wish he would just say it and just say.
Poirier is a BJJ black belt. Like what?
I think no. That's just this isn't true. I wish want to see Habib versus Ferguson. That if you just said like, Habib isn't the real deal until he fights Ferguson. I think that's what the commenter just wants to say.
But I would like to add that Alex Keeley has notified me that this commenter is a known troll on the site. So Alex Keeley apologizes for not warning us.
Okay.
Yeah, fair. Yeah, I mean this is just pretty obviously like a troll comment.
Yeah,
he's unquestionably the lightweight GOAT, and with the same love I have for Valentina, I have been one of the world's biggest BJ Penn supporters forever. And he is the only person who maybe could have ever had a claim to it over Habib. It's just, this is not a question.
I agree with the BJ Penn assessment. For me, he was just like the greatest by default. Because at the point of at the height of his run at lightweight, he was so dominant. And then the belt has bounced around so much. Or like Benson Henderson is another good answer. He's there's legitimate arguments that he lost to Gilbert. He lost both to Frankie. But a win is a win. So I think he was in the conversation. And then there just hasn't been enough activity at the top of that division. So for me, BJ was just the default go. But Habib passed him with that win over Gaethje.
I thought Habib passed him before he went over Gaethje. I thought he passed him. I thought there was an argument with the Conor win. And I thought once he beat Dustin that he was the lightweight GOAT. Mm. And then at that point, we were trending towards a fight with Tony. Obviously, that didn't happen. I thought if he had beaten Tony, given the run Tony was on, that then he would have had a really, really good argument for, like, overall GOAT status. That never happened. And as much as I respect Gaethje, I think beating Gaethje, even after Gaethje beating Tony, is not quite the same as it would have been if he had just beaten Tony when Tony was, you know – Tony has like a really good argument to being the second greatest lightweight of all time.
100%.
Like he has a really good argument if you just take titles out of it, like the run of wins he put together over the quality of competition. So Habib is it. I think it's hilarious that you want to see him fight a grappler troll person because he is the grappler. Like he's the end game. The Tony fight never made sense to me as like something fun. Like it made sense competitively because that should have happened. But I always thought he was going to roll through Tony because Tony's not that great of a defensive wrestler. And if your game plan is you're going to out grapple Habib, good luck, bruh. Like, okay, have fun with that. So, I mean, cool. Yeah. Charles could get that work too. Like it'd be the same thing.
I do think if the Habib-Tony fight at its peak, especially at the fifth time before it fell out because of the pandemic, that fight was for the title and the greatest lightweight ever. Whoever would have won that probably wouldn't have been the best. Because if Tony hadn't – because this is before Tony lost to Gaethje. You're still on that massive win streak. Because if Tony had beaten Habib, which we all agree probably wouldn't have happened, but if by some miracle Tony beat Habib, there's no argument he would have been the best ever. I actually do put Tony Ferguson number two. Greatest lightweight ever, and then probably BJ third, maybe. No,
I'm a weirdo. I'm not as high on Tony as everyone else is. I think he's the top.
I'm not saying he's the. I'm not saying he's the second most talented. I'm saying just based off of what he's done, he's probably the second best lightweight.
Dude, I have been a known Tony Ferguson hater forever. Like for the last 2 years, I've thought the top five guys in the division would beat him. And I still think that's true. I'm like, I thought Gaethje was going to beat him. I always thought Khabib would beat him. I think Conor, everyone really seemed to think that Tony was a bad matchup for Conor, and I always thought that was really wrong. I think Poirier would beat him. But who he beat, who he won over, like, that's an incredible run. And the merits kind of warrant him. Like, I think putting him at number two is totally a very legit argument.
I have actually, yeah, I have Gaethje, whatever. back to the question. Okay, it's a troll question.
Gaethje could be the second most
talented. The number one pound for pound fighter. Like, that's.
Yeah, I'm sorry? 100%.
Say that
again. He's beaten all the best people in by far the best division. He should obviously be the number one pound for pound fighter.
Yeah.
From Terrence Leverett, this cat posted like five questions today. So I'm glad we got at least one of them in. From Terrence Leverett on Twitter, apologies if I mispronounced your name. Besides Aljo, no one is talking about Figgy blatant fix grabs. I'm assuming it's fence grabs. What are your thoughts on how this gave him an unfair position? He should have been taken down near the fence. Instead, he was taken down in the open. Jed, your thoughts on Davidson Figueiredo's fence grabs against Alex Perez this weekend at UFC 255?
I didn't notice him in real time. I didn't notice him until Aljo, like, was shouting about it. I was live blogging and didn't catch my eye because I was too focused on that dope-ass scissor sweep he tried to go for. I mean, sure. I haven't rewatched the fight to, like, notice. If he grabbed the fence, that sucks, but...
The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. DraftKings brings you same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. Don't miss out as the NBA postseason winds down, and new customers to DraftKings can bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets instantly. You can download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VOXMMA. That's code VOXMMA for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over. Age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity, but giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Whatever. This happens all the time in fighting. Just... they're never going to punish it. If you're not cheating, you're not trying. I still don't know why we don't have like a plexiglass surrounding that you can't grab, but we use a fence and the referees are never going to deduct a point or stop it from happening. So you should cheat. If you are a fighter, cheat until they take points away, because it may well help you defend your lightweight or flyweight championship. So cheat. Good for you, Davidson.
Has Alex Perez mentioned anything on it?
Until he
says something. Like, my stance is always, when fans have complaints about anything, especially like this was the big conversation when if Khabib had made weight or not. He did, obviously, according to this, what the guy at the scale said, right, in air quotes, because we didn't see it. But I remember Casey was all, he didn't make weight, this is a big deal. I don't think it's a big deal until Justin Gaethje says something, because he's the one fist fighting. Because obviously he would get more money, but he never said anything, so I didn't comment on it. That's my take on this. Until Alex Perez says something, I don't think it's the end of the world.
I'm just pro cheating, so if you cheat, that's fine. As long as you don't get caught, you've won. Congratulations.
There you go.
I just don't think
Casey.
I just don't think this is the type of foul where you go, you know what? If Figgy didn't grab, because he still got the takedown, he just didn't get the takedown where he wanted to get, or Perez wanted to get the takedown. But I don't think there's anything to suggest that if Perez had gotten that takedown right along the cage, Perez dominates, and now he's the new he's the 125 champ. I just don't see that. but I've always said too, like, I think I'm not quite in the same, not quite as adamant as Jed is, but fence grabs, groin shots, eye pokes, they're all legal. The first one is always legal. I've never
the first two are first, legal.
Well, I'm being generous. I've been working MMA 13 years now. I've never seen a fence grab or an eye poke or a groin shot be deducted a point on the first one. I've seen DQs, like, because the eye poke's so bad or the groin shot's so bad, but I've never seen a guy get deducted a point on the first one. Never. Have you?
Fence grabs are always a weird thing, too, because, like, that one has the most obvious fix to it. Like, deducting a point is in the way the fights are scored is kind of, like, a really big deal, so I can at least understand the implicit, like, why refs might not want to do it. But, like, if the fence grab should be a really easy thing to, okay, well, you grab the fence, we're just going to start you on the ground. You have given up standing position here. Like, there'd be a really easy fix to implement. But I also just don't care. So whatever, it's fine.
Is the most egregious fence grab still the Jose Aldo against Chad Mendes one? That seems to be the one everyone always brings up. Right. Right.
Don't know what you're talking about.
Sure. Anyway.
Is that the fight where Chad Mendes just got his head blown off by a knee?
Yeah. Sure did. When he broke away. Right. You don't remember Jose? No, you don't. You remember when he ran into the you definitely remember Jose Aldo running into the crowd and security just swarming. Yep. Try, like,
oh yeah, the King of Rio. Sure.
Yeah, yeah.
You recall that.
Yep.
Anything else? Not sure what you're talking about.
Sure. From Anid Saranga, apologies if I mispronounced your name again. Who's going to be the first to fight TJ Dillashaw? Do you guys think he can beat Jan? Sure. I mean, TJ Dillashaw was the bantamweight champion at one point in time, whether that was because of extracurricular activities or not, we don't know, because he obviously failed his USADA test after his flyweight debut against Henry Cejudo. But I called for him to fight Corey Sandhagen after Corey Sandhagen beat Marlon. I think a lot of us were in agreement at the time that that would be a really fun scrap. My opinion hasn't changed. TJ can obviously fight in January. Corey Sandhagen wants the fight. I don't know if TJ Dillashaw wants the fight, unless they want to run it back with Dominic Cruz. We do Cruz Dillashaw too, because I was at that fight and that fight absolutely ruled. It's also really close. A lot of people think TJ won, but Casey, who should TJ Dillashaw fight first when he returns to the UFC?
If I was Corey Sandhagen, I would want the TJ Dillashaw match. I think the UFC will most likely want TJ versus Cruz, because I think that's the biggest match. And I'm still kind of unhappy with the Cruz stoppage over Cejudo, but that's another story. To answer the second part, do you guys think he can beat Jan? We're going to have to see what this post-USADA TJ is, to be honest. If he goes out there and defeats Sandhagen or Cruz convincingly, sure. Jan's the champion, but I don't think we're at the point where he's unbeatable. We just think, oh, he's clearly the best guy right now. He's on a good run. And that's why I see Jan. Jed, Ed, I called you Ed. Jed, where do you see Jan?
The best guy.
I'm sorry?
I mean, I don't know that Jan's
he has the best guy.
Well, okay, he sure does. But well, clearly is not the right word. But
I think he, the way to describe Jan is he has the belt at the moment, but let's not forget he beat Uriah Faber and then beat Jose Aldo. Like, he hasn't beaten Sanhagen, Sterling, any of these prime bantamweights in the peak of their careers right now. So that's why the Aljamain Sterling
number five guys.
100%. The Sterling fight would have answered a ton of questions. Like, fighting a guy longer than him, fighting a like an incredible grappler, fighting a guy in the prime of his career like that. Like, the Jimmy Rivera fight was obviously impressive, but Jimmy Rivera himself said he didn't really take Jan that seriously and kind of gave it away. So the fight against Sterling would have answered so many questions. I hope they book it. If they want to make that the main event and makes TJ in the co-main event, wouldn't hate it. Would not hate it. So we have a little bantamweight final four going on right there. Because if TJ wins, beats Corey Sandhagen, or Corey beats TJ, I think the winner of that rightfully deserves a title, the crack at the winner of Sterling and Jan. Just my opinion. Jed, what are your thoughts on this whole TJ situation? Who would you like to see him fight first?
I don't hate your ideas. I frankly would actually like to see him not fight Corey Sandhagen, just because it's a really long layoff. And as I know, a lot of people, the idea of ring rust is controversial at this point, but I would just like to see him. 2 years is a really long time away from the sport, and I'd like to see where he's at. And then I'll fold this into the, can he beat Jan? I think the answer is no. And I don't think we really have a great concept on who Petr Yan is or will be as a fighter slash champion at this point. But TJ Dillashaw will be 35, if I'm not mistaken, by the time he fights again. And the lower weight classes, they just don't age as well. Like, you can be a good heavyweight into your 50s damn near. Like, lower weight classes, people age like bread. So I just don't anticipate him doing super well at 35, coming off of or potentially a lack of assistance in that category. 2 years off, like, I think it's going to be a really tough road to hoe for him. So in that regard, I kind of like to see him not fight Corey Sandhagen. I do think a Dominic Cruz or a Frankie Edgar fight would be something that maybe gives him, lets him wet his feet a little more, that is still a high value, highly interesting bout for people to, but if you throw him in there with Sandhagen, all right. I mean, I'd certainly watch it, because if Dillashaw is, you know, if he's the same guy, that's a banger of a fight. And if he's the same dude, I think he can still certainly be competitive with anybody in the division. So I'm cool with what you're throwing out there. Make that the co-main event for Jan Aljo when that happens. Yeah, sign me up.
I selfishly want Cruz versus Edgar, and I don't want to sacrifice that fight. TJ, I know your eye favorite would probably want that fight because they have some beef, but I don't think anyone wants to watch that fight in 2021. We do have Marlon versus Rob Font coming up. He could fight the winner of that, because Marlon, TJ, I think at one point they were the two best bantamweights in the world. If Rob Font beats Marlon, that's a massive win. Obviously, Chito Vera is supposed to fight Jose Aldo.
Yeah,
Chito and Jose are fighting. They're in December, the December 19th card. The winner of that would be a lot of fun. That Sugar Sean is out there. So, yeah, bantamweight is a lot of fun. So take your pick.
Actually, you know what? You changed my mind. I disagree. Actually, I do want to see for the first fight back to be TJ versus Uriah Faber, because I think this is because if TJ is smart, he should have some ring rust, and this will be a quote unquote tune up match against someone like Faber. And if Faber ever wants to fight TJ, this is basically the best opportunity. This would be the best opportunity. Well,
yeah. If he doesn't fight him now, he never will get.
That's what I mean. For Faber, if Faber wants the best version, the easiest version to beat, is probably the TJ win right when he comes back. And for TJ, it's a much easier fight than say fighting someone like Sandhagen. So that's why I said for Sandhagen, I would love to fight TJ right when he comes back, because that'd be the biggest name. It'd be lots of press, and the potential victory would look maybe more impressive than what it actually is. So
maybe throw that one, maybe not in January, because I don't know if Faber is even remotely in fight shape, because he just had his second kid, or is having a second kid. I can't quite remember.
He had the kid?
Wow. He did? Yeah, he did. It's a miracle. So maybe when they come back from Fight Island, let him get back in shape, because I don't think they want to throw both of those two cats on Fight Island.
All right.
Who wins, Goku versus Naruto? Oh, man, I've had this argument a million times. Probably Goku because he's a god, and Naruto's... I'll leave it at that because we don't have to get... I mean, I could talk about this for hours, but we don't have enough time in the day. Jed looks bored already. Casey's laughing.
I don't know who Naruto is. Like, I know in concept, but I've never once watched that at all. But based on your assessment, if Goku's a god and the other one isn't, then I'm going to take the one who's a god.
Well, Naruto has a demon sealed inside of him, so he does have some untapped potential. Yeah, I would agree. I just think Naruto's power. I mean, Goku's power level is infinite, and Naruto, we've kind over of seen. 9, yeah, well over 9,000.
Yeah, what? Come on,
dork. Naruto, we've seen. I think his peak, and while he is the most powerful ninja from this time frame ever, Goku's died and come back maybe 7 or 8 times, and it's to the point where, like, now they're on like Dragon Ball Super, where his power, he's literally like he's like god level Super Saiyan. So yeah, Goku wins that 10 out of 10 times.
All right, you got your answer.
So fun tangent. There's the current Dragon Ball run is there's this character who can like absorb people and like become them. So he's trying to fight Goku, and I can't remember the exactly what happened, but he basically eats the earth. He eats the earth, so he becomes the planet, and he has like a face on it. So it's like planet Earth with like a face on it. He's like laughing. They're like, how do we beat this guy? So naturally, Vegeta just starts punching the ground really hard with his fist, and the planet's like, ah, my head. It is quite ridiculous.
I'm kind of in on that storyline.
Yeah, dude. So the planet's like, ha ha, you can't defeat me. And Vegeta's like, well, forget this, and just starts punching the ground really hard. Oh, 10 out of 10, good times. All
right.
So if you can beat up a planet, you could probably beat up Naruto.
Thank you for your question. Here's a fun one.
Rich P. Top Tire, new commenter from I've seen. What unbooked fight do you make first thing 2021 for the betterment of the division and the UFC? So I'm saying which fight that we previously had that fell out for whatever reason, whether it be the pandemic, injuries, visa issues, which fight would you book first? Rebook first. Jed, you look like you're deep in thought, so Casey, I'll start with you.
Well, he's not coming back, but if he did, obviously he'd beat Ferguson. We just got to see that. That was a canceled pandemic fight. What's going on with Stipe? Is he just injured? Is there a heavyweight title? No.
If Francis Stipe, originally the plan was March, but that was just like a targeted date. We don't really know.
I just want to see the heavyweight division move again. Either make an interim Francis versus John Jones or something weird like that. I want the top guys of the heavyweight division to start fighting. I'm tired. We've seen lots of heavyweight fights, just not the guys at the top. So that's basically why I won't.
Jed, which fight do you rebook ASAP from all the fights that fell out this year?
I think you just do Aljo Yan. I mean, I'm with Casey for as far as heavyweight, just because Curtis Blaydes deserves a title shot. Francis Ngannou deserves a title shot. Stipe might fight John Jones or retire or whatever. I'm really not confident what Stipe is doing. We spent so much damn time on Stipe DC trilogy. It's been 3 years at this point or something damn near to it, and just feels like that division is held hostage. But I just don't know, like, I don't know that that's getting clarity super quickly, whereas we just get this Aljo Yan fight done because Bantamweight has a little more clarity, but Bantamweight's just sick. It's an awesome division. There are a lot of really, like you mentioned just a minute ago, like if Yan beats Aljo, that'll really be the first top-level guy he's actually beaten in the division, like because Uriah Faber and Jose Aldo are not. They're just not that. So, yeah. Like, I'd love to see that fight and then see who comes next. Corey Sandhagen against Jan would be something new if TJ Dillashaw comes back and gets a win. Like, I don't want the bantamweight division to end up in the same place the heavyweight division is. and it really could, especially given how Cejudo kind of just bailed on it. So, yeah, run that back as quickly as you can.
Yeah, I think the answer is Sterling Yan, but just because we've already had that. I wouldn't hate – I don't know if it makes sense, but Makhachev RDA, just because I really want to see Makhachev against an elite fighter. He's been out for more than a year, and he's had what? He's supposed to fight Alexander Hernandez, which, again, that wouldn't be a bad fight either, but I think he's kind of past that right now. He was supposed to fight in Brooklyn, and then it got pushed, and then RDA fell out of the Fight Island fight, and then Makhachev fell out of their next fight. I would like to see those two fight five rounds. I want to see Makhachev against five rounds. I want to see him against RDA, who's, I think, one of the more unheralded fighters in terms of, like, we talk about best fighters on the planet. Not many people bring him up, but he's been around forever. So that is my answer, Makhachev versus RDA, because there's a lot of questions I think that would answer.
And it's not my top two, but I still want to see Amanda Nunes versus Megan Anderson. Megan Anderson has earned that ass whooping, and let's make it happen.
Gilbert Burns Usman, obviously, because that fight has fallen off twice. Not because I want, like, there are other fights at welterweight I want to see, but if that's the fight that has to happen, we get past that. There's a lot more fights that can happen. So that's kind of like a door to open the rest of the welterweight division. Yeah, million fights.
I want to see Wei Li back in the mix. I feel like I assume it's because of the coronavirus. We just haven't even heard her name really talked about since her fight of the year. But let's get her back out there. Man, I feel like all that momentum is completely gone now.
So there are your answers. Good question, by the way. Terrence Leverett, again, thoughts on Dana saying he's been talking about doing the atom weight division. Wouldn't this be a perfect opportunity for him to make a division on tough? That way people can learn who they are, kind of like how they did for women's flyweight and women's strawweight. That was actually a really good tournament, division, I think. Yeah. We were talking about doing tournaments and Grand Prix on Between the Links, but lately the only tournaments we get for a title is when they introduce new weight classes on the Ultimate Fighter. Actually, the flyweight, the strawweight season was the last full season of Tough I watched, just because I knew all those women from Invicta, and they were like Rose, Tisha Torres, Beck Rawlings at the time. Like, they were the best strawweights in the world. Obviously, Claudia and Ioana didn't do Tough for whatever. I can't quite remember.
Claudia didn't do it because
they were too good.
No, it was weight cutting.
That makes a lot more sense.
Which is why Carla did so dang well, because Carla is an atom weight who fights at straw weight.
Yeah, and that's why Rose did well too, because she, it's not like she cuts a lot of weight either. And then they obviously did it with a flyweight. Didn't really work out too well because Nico Montano ended up fighting. It was like a whole lot of injuries. Like, Star Eubanks had weight cut issues. Roxanne got another fight. Nico Montano won, and they got stripped when she fell off the Valentina fight. So, Jed, do you like the idea of an atomweight division, and would you like to see it on Tough if this is the case?
Yes, and sure. I've always felt that Tough is a stale format. Like, we've talked about that ad nauseum elsewhere. But the one thing that it is really good for is helping to develop new divisions. I thought forever ago that they should have just made a women's featherweight Tough, like, to build that division, because that's still, they still don't even have rankings because they don't have that many women's featherweight fighters in the UFC. And I think if you're going to do atom weight, you should absolutely just lead that division off with a season of Tough, to crown the champion too. That's fine. Like, I didn't love when they did that for strawweight, just because, I don't know. I the whole time I really felt like Ioana and Claudia were probably the actual two, you know, because they were fighting outside of the Tough bubble, and the sort of feeling was that was the true champion. And then ultimately they ended up winning that kind of came to fruition. But I think you still just do that. And that's the best way to introduce it and at least build a division kind of from scratch. So yeah, if they want to do the atom weight, I think there are way worse ways to do it than doing it through Tough.
They did do a featherweight tournament on Tough. You know who the finals were? Macy Chazen and Panny Kianzid, who are both bantamweights now. After they won, they dropped down to bantamweight, which Megan Anderson took a lot of issue.
I've been watching Tough in the last few years.
And Panny was always a bantamweight. At least Macy was a featherweight who actually did come down. Macy,
so, like, like Casey said with Carla, Carla's basically an atom weight fighting a strawweight, so she did so well on tough. Basie and Panny were bantamweights fighting at featherweight, and when they won, they immediately dropped back down, and Megan Anderson took a lot of issue with that, considering they were billed as like, oh, we're going to build the featherweight division, and then the two finalists didn't even fight in the division. I think Bea Malecki was on that season. She's now bantamweight.
At least with atomweight, you wouldn't get that.
Because there's nowhere to drop back down.
But the problem,
yeah, he's not going to go down anymore.
Why? Like I really wish UFC or Bellator had atomweights. I do not want to see it on tough because all that's going to happen, you're going to get very dangerous weight cuts again, and because that's the whole problem of tough is the whole lots of fights, lots of weight cuts, and these atomweights have to cut a lot of weight. And especially, I mean, we need to kind of warm it up here because the way the schedules are, there's going to be some lady problems with all these really close fights to make that 105 weight class. And it's just going to happen. And I just don't feel like we're going to get the finals are going to be the two best roommates, the two best people who can live in a tough house rather than the two best fighters. So, yes, and Adam Waits, no for tough.
I would like just a regular tournament. Doesn't have to be
just
a fighter.
Just do a regular tournament. Do readjust the contender series where the contender series is a tournament for, I don't know, just don't do tough. I don't need to see the Adam Waits pick what bunk bed they want. It's just not.
Who would Carla, if she wants to, it's ultimately her decision. Probably Loma. I would imagine she's pretty short.
Who else? You have a lot, but you have a lot of Asian ones. You have like Sohee Ham, Masaki. I know there's a few more I can't think of, but Danielle Taylor. She's actually
she's short.
She's a shorty.
Obviously, in the past, Michelle Watterson's not going back down to Adam.
No, she's not going down.
At this point, She's built herself up to be a legitimate strawweight at this point.
Maybe Jessica Penny I know she's still training. Get Jessica Penny back. She was the original atomweight champ.
The OG atomweight.
OG, yeah.
Yeah.
So
we just get Cyborg to come down. I think it'll be fine. Cyborg can take that weight. It'll be okay.
Her leg.
Stop ducking whoever.
Hey, maybe Laura Sanka will come out. Maybe Laura Sanka will come out of retirement.
Oh, yeah.
Jinyu Fry, well, she was an atomweight champion,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Jinyu Fry, yep.
But she got stripped for missing weight.
Yeah, she wanted
to got stripped. See, do you think they bring back, who's it, CO Ham? She in Ryzen right now?
She got released.
Hamderlay.
Is released from Ryzen because I think because of the coronavirus that she couldn't get enough fights. So either she's released or she vacated her 105 belt because she hasn't fought since New Year's. So.
Oof. Angela Lee would be fun, but I think she has a pretty good setup at one championship, so I don't think she's making that jump. Or she's having a kid now. I can't quite remember. Anyway.
Well, we got to find out. We can make a trade. We just need to make another trade. Like, let's just get rid of Davis and Figueiredo. It's fine. Just make that swap.
All right. I like this comment real quick. We can get it.
I did go to law
school. I went to law school.
I'm not actually sure which of the ones. Oh, it's the one. It's this one right here, wherever my finger is.
That's one.
That's the law school diploma.
Law school.
What's in your? So you have legitimate degrees. Casey has championship belts and a cozy fireplace, and I have a bunch of comic books behind me. It is what it
is. I'd take the comic books. That seems like the best.
You have comic books in the back, don't you? Sometimes?
Mine are all over. My bookshelves are on a separate wall, but yeah.
I keep forgetting you're one of the comic book fans on the site.
I am.
Like legitimate. You have blankets, right? I think I saw that one. I hate to say it, your view of comic books is much more online with my view of comic books. Ooh. I hate to agree with you, Jed.
Did you guys just become best friends?
I would absolutely defer to you as the true comic book person, but I dabble. I'm in.
Damon reads a lot of comic books too, but I think he's much more into the colorful tights and superheroes, which is fine. I like those
too. Yeah, I don't have a lot of those. I have some.
There's some good ones going on. Yeah. I have far too many.
Took a couple of graphic novel classes in college. Oh,
the best. That would be – I would always want to – this is definitely a casual show. Thank you, Shiger Tark. Excellent name.
I agree.
With Spike – did not expect a Spike Carlisle question from Suzanne on YouTube comments. Will Spike Carlisle wait for the bell this time around or not? Jed, I don't know if you remember, but Spike Carlisle, when he fought Billy Quarantillo, decided he was done fighting that round with like 7 seconds left and just took a hook to the face. I actually thought that fight deserved fight of the night because that fight was a lot of fun. Dana White himself, I asked him at the press conference.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
Literally, I have never seen that before. So, yeah, not even Dana White knew what to make about that. So, hopefully.
Sometimes you're done. Sometimes you're
if you like, if you like big jack dudes with orange cornrows that likes to do the Joker laugh, Spike Carlisle is your kind of fighter.
Yeah, yeah, he is.
I mean, great, great nickname.
What's his nickname?
The Alpha Ginger. Like, okay. It's exactly the nickname you would think for a guy like Spike Carlisle. Yeah. You looked at him like, that's a guy who thinks this would be a great nickname.
What's the deal from Brendan Adrian in the YouTube comments? What's the delay on Michael Chandler? They say because he needs more time after the weight cut, but look at the flyweights, UFC 256. I don't know if you've ever met Michael Chandler, Brendan Adrian. Dude is a thick boy. It doesn't cut to 155 very easily. Like, I would say his weight cut is going to be one of the harder ones. And lightweight, you're not going to get a lot of last-minute fights with him. I think he's going to fight Justin Gaethje, just a hunch. With Tony Ferguson tied up with Charles Oliveira, Conor McGregor tied up with Dustin Poirier, Habib's a mystery, Dan Hooker's a mystery. So RDA will probably fight someone, but I have a feeling it's going to be Michael Chandler versus Justin Gaethje. World Series of Fighting versus Bellator inside a UFC octagon. Jed, your thoughts?
So two things. First, I think that that makes sense to me. I think he is going to fight Justin Gaethje. And if you follow him on social media this morning or last night, he posted that he was beginning his training camp Monday.
Yep.
So he's going to be coming in soon. The second thing, really important for fans who apparently don't know this, fighters don't owe you a damn thing. So if they want to not fight because they've spent the last 8 weeks or 8 months in a series of training camps and they want to take some time off to let their body heal, spend time with their family, that's totally okay. And that's fine. So him, oh, well, look, the flyweights turned around quickly. Like, whatever, dude. Like, that's what Davis and Figueiredo did. People are not the same. They have lived very different lives and are working toward different goals and have different incentive structures. So he's taking his time for whatever reason that may be. And that's totally okay, because whoever he does fight's going to be awesome. I'm not even a big Michael Chandler guy, but he's a top lightweight, and he's going to fight another top lightweight sometime before next summer, certainly. So it'll be an awesome fight. And you just kind of got to hold your horses till it happens.
I've heard a few rumors and rumblings, but none of this is confirmed whatsoever. But I've heard a few people say that they're hearing rumors of a Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday Fight Island thing, kind of like they did in Jacksonville. So fight card Saturday, fight card Wednesday, fight card Saturday, which would be a lot of work. If that is the case, I would assume, and this is all assumptions, Conor Poirier would be the first Saturday because they would want a whole week of media. They don't want to break it all up with the Wednesday card. The Wednesday, I would love if Chandler is fighting Gaethje, Chandler Gaethje 5 rounds on the Wednesday or Saturday, either one, because that would mean those four are still sort of on the same timeline. Tony was only like a month ahead. So they all those top lightweights would be like a month apart in terms of time frame. And then I don't know who the other main event would be. Don't really care because it'll be a fun fight probably. But that's if that's the case, stick Chandler versus I want to see Chandler I saw some of the comment section say co-main event UFC 257. I want Chandler Gaethje 5 rounds. If they do want to fight in January, I would like it to be on them. But they are both very pro US of A. So if they want to stick those two guys in the Middle East to fight, might be a little weird, but it's not like they have to do a lot of media and fans would get to watch that fight. So it would be a lot of fun. Hopefully it's 5 rounds. Casey, your thoughts?
I'm not actually in love with Chandler Gaethje. I just want to see the. I just want to see both of those gentlemen fight. If they fight each other, cool. I'm just kind of tired of talking about Michael Chandler and potential matchups. Honestly, I'm just like, all right, let's do it. He can fight RDA. He can fight Hooker. I'm like, cool. You know, I don't care, honestly.
No. I just think at this point, it's just process of elimination. All the other lightweights are booked up. Gaethje doesn't have a fight. Chandler was there for his fight. They both cut weight the exact same time. The timelines are there. I saw them chatting on the plane on the way back from Abu Dhabi. Make it happen.
Okay. But I like to point out, but he said, look at the flyweights at UFC 256. That hasn't happened yet.
That is very true.
Which goes into their next question.
From Tristan Gordet, with the weight cut from the YouTube comments, with the weight cut being a possible issue for Figueiredo versus Moreno, champions gets top billing, heading into headlining UFC 256, why not just do a non-title fight as your main event, El Cucuy versus Oliveira? They've done it before. Well, it's a pay-per-view. I don't think Tony Ferguson, Charles Oliveira, as awesome as that fight is going to be enough to people that shell out $65. We just had this conversation with UFC 255. A, if you have a championship, I know we all disagree on like the championship, a title is just basically like employee of the month. The UFC doesn't necessarily mean you are the best fighter. You just happen to have the belt. Sometimes it works out, like Khabib, John Jones, Valentina. They are the best fighter and they happen to have the belt. If you have a belt, you should headline or co-main event. I just think it's the right thing to do. If they are all four, if these two fights are still on the same card, Tony Ferguson versus Charles Oliveira in a 3-round fight, headlining over a 5-round title fight, would be a little bizarre. Jed, your thoughts?
The issue here, and we talked about this on Between the Links, I'm a company man, you should go watch that, is that this shouldn't be the pay-per-view. When this was originally, this started as two title fights, and it was Amanda Nunes on there, and it was the Usman Burns, and that was going to be a sick event, definitely the pay-per-view. Now both of those fights are gone. We're replacing it with a flyweight title fight, and the co-main event is pretty decent. Like it's a really fun fight, but it's not like the most important or a fight that's really going to get fans super jacked for Ferguson versus Oliveira. I think that's more of a hardcore fan delight. This just shouldn't be the pay-per-view. They should make the December 19th card, that fight night that's headlined by Khamzat Chimaev, the new hot shit on the block, versus Leon Edwards, the guy who frankly deserves a welterweight title fight over Gilbert Burns. So they should just do that swap. And then, yeah, Davison Figueiredo can headline a fight night card. That'll be great. That totally fits with kind of where he's at in his career. He's still the headliner, as he should be, because I totally agree with you on that. But we talked about this in Between the Links. 256 is going to sell like 100,000 pay-per-views as currently constructed. And if they just put the December 19th card instead on pay-per-view, I think that thing does 200,000 to 300,000 buys and makes a lot more sense, because the December 19th card is hot fire. So, yeah, that's where I stand.
Yeah. Casey, your thoughts?
Yeah, what Jed said.
Yeah, UFC 256 has a lot of fun undercard fights.
There is a good chance that I think Moreno is going to be fine, but Figueiredo seriously might not make weight for 256, and that's going to suck because then it's going to be the whole, oh, Figueiredo sucks, he can't make weight, he's not the real champ. It's like, well, he got put into a position, obviously thrown some money, and he's going for it, but it might not happen. So until they walk into the cage, even if he does make weight, because then we have to worry about the rehydration process. There's a lot of things that could go wrong for 256.
He has said all fight week when I was there that he has spent a large amount of the money he's gotten on his nutrition and weight cutting. So he said that's the biggest thing he's done. So I feel much more confident of Figueiredo making weight in December 2020 than I did, back in February when he fought Joe B the first time. So I think he will make weight. I think that fight's going to be awesome. There are a lot of fun fights on the prelims in the undercard. Looks like a real good ESPN card, if I do say so myself.
Sure does.
Like JDS Cyril Gane's awesome. Dern Janderoba's awesome.
Oh, yes.
Quarantillo, yes. Billy Quarantillo and Gavin Tucker have some sort of issue with each other. I'm not quite 100% sure what that's about. Tisha Torres, Angela Hill. let's Moicano and Fazeev is finally coming back. Sounds like a good ESPN card, though.
Yeah, it's a pretty solid ESPN card, and they should just swap them. I don't think they're going to do it because
they won't.
They can't ever think outside the box like that, but they should just swap these fins.
They did it for when Kane Verdum 2 fell out. They made of the main event. Can't remember the year they and Hendrix Wonderboy became the new main event because it was elevated. They just made that a fight night.
Yep.
And that was kind of the emergence of Wonderboy because I think
they
didn't
have a title to put atop it. At least this time they have a title, so they can still think it out. A strong Pokemon. Okay.
Naruto's power level is equal to a strong Pokemon. My Pokemon knowledge ends at number 150 or 151. If you want to, you know, whatever. We don't have to get into it, but so I don't know.
Or like
Mew? No, Mew's the original Pokemon. He's Pokemon 1 And now there's like all this other lore and you can like upgrade and everything. I'm not 100% sure. I would have to, my brother's much more into it. You could be right. I just don't want to give out incorrect information without all of the details. Again, this same person, strong Pokemon will trash anyone from the Naruto universe. You may be right. I just don't know because I don't really consume Pokemon. So my knowledge ends at 150. So all those ones, no way.
That still makes you the Pokemon expert on this particular broadcast.
That's true. Oh, me and Sean Alshadi got into a little argument on Twitter about it because he was giving out incorrect information to fans on the original 150 Pokemon. After Sean. After Hazmat, so this man means Hamzat, Louie. After Hazmat runs through Edwards, if the UFC continues this two-division contender gimmick going, who should he fight at middleweight to break into the top 10 as well? Well, if he beats Leon Edwards, I guarantee you he's going to get a welterweight title shot. So, but for the sake of this question, Jed, who would be the equivalent of beating Leon Edwards in middleweight?
I mean, the equivalent would be beating Robert Whittaker just because he and Leon Edwards – have been very successful in the division and deserve a title fight and are not getting the title fight that they deserve. If you want to run that, I guess do that. Why not? I think if he was going to go back to middleweight though, they probably give him like Darren Till or maybe Cannoneer, you know, a top five guy there. But I think the closest comp would be Whittaker. Also think the idea that he's going to run through Leon Edwards is questionable at best.
Well, Leon Edwards is sitting number 3 welterweight. The number 3 middleweight apparently is Jared Cannonier. He's coming off an arm break against Robert Whittaker. Paulo Costa is coming off a loss. Joel Romero, I think, is going to go to light heavyweight. Darren Till's injured. I honestly think the Derek Brunson comparison would be a good one too, because Derek Brunson has been calling to fight everyone in the top 10 and no one's answering. He called out Paulo Costa. He called out Khamzat Chimaev. He called out Cannonier. He's down to fight anyone. He called out Robert Whittaker again. So I actually think the Derek Brunson comparison is a good one. Khamzat versus Brunson I think would be a scrap. Casey, your thoughts?
I don't really have an opinion on this. It's just – this is a little too many ifs. For me, Hamzat running to Edwards is let's get there first,
I've said this 1,000 times on like every show we've done. This is the first real welterweight that Khamzat Chimaev has fought. He fought two middleweights and a lightweight. Yeah, he fought two middleweights and then a lightweight that went up to welterweight. This is the first welterweight he's fought.
Okay,
because Reese McKee is awesome. What's up?
It's the first good fighter he's fought.
Reese McKee is a good fighter. He's just a prospect.
He's a fine fighter. But he's not like a good fighter.
Sure.
Leon Edwards is a good to great fighter.
Like if Reese McKee and Khamzat Chimaev rematch like 5 years from now, wouldn't surprise me because I think Reese, but I'd also think Rhys McKee is lightweight, and that's where he should be. Right. Also, one of Hamzat Shamayev's victims is no longer in the UFC. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. The guy he beat first.
White Mike Tyson?
That one? Phillips?
Yes. There he is.
Yeah. He a fine fighter, John Phillips.
Is he?
I don't know. I'm just being...
Fight Circus. All right, finally. As we run out of time, Anid Saranga. Fight Circus 2030 main event. DJ and Figueiredo versus Francis Ngannou. Who do you guys think would win? Who wins and how? So, Jed, we're going to use this opportunity to give you all the time in the world you want to talk Fight Circus that just happens. For those of you in our comment section who don't know what it is, I'm sure Jed will fill you in. And then you can answer this man's question if you want, throw any other possible fights you want to see. But let's not forget, this man's specific question is Fight Circus 2030. Jed, the floor is yours.
Let me just address the question out of the gate here, because this past weekend at Fight Circus, which is a collaboration between Full Metal Dojo and Cam Soda, and is one of the most majestic things that's entered the mixed
martial arts. Before, don't search Cam Soda at work.
Yeah, don't do that. Absolutely don't search Fight Circus at work either, frankly.
Incognito mode. Your own
personal time, but. It doesn't take itself seriously at all, because it's not. It can only loosely be described as mixed martial arts, but it can be entirely described as awesome. And in it this past weekend, their first event, they did a 2-on-1 fight. It went exactly how you would anticipate a 2-on-1 fight going. This weekend, they had another 2-on-1 fight that was far more competitive, featuring the same two guys from the first 2-on-1 fight against this different opponent who was just way better at fighting, apparently. And then they upped the ante and did a 3-on-1 fight, and there were some special stipulations in there as well. But the short answer is, I have my entire life just assumed that the two people will always beat the one person, even given a huge size disparity, because really, if you have any kind of tactics or thoughts, all you have to do is get one of the guys just has to, like, restrict a limb or movement on the solo fighter, and then that frees up the other guy to just do whatever he pleases, usually just grabbing a throat or a neck or something like that. But this now I'm questioning it, because such were the competitive nature of these fights that I don't know, maybe Francis Ngannou, who is clearly a much better fighter than either of the lone gentlemen who competed this past weekend, maybe he can just like jaw Mighty Mouse right out of the gate. And then if that happens, it's just one-on-one Figueiredo versus Ngannou. And I gotta say, I'm gonna favor Ngannou in those circumstances. So I would still lean towards the two fighters versus the one fighter, but Francis Ngannou is basically a Martian who hits people harder than anyone in the history of the world, so he's got a chance. But beyond that, Fight Circus is amazing. It does a lot of really weird and stupid things. Sometimes it doesn't work. Frankly, many times it doesn't work. But they also just do a lot of things that do work or are low-key really interesting, even though you think that they're ridiculous. Like, they did a leg-kicking contest this past weekend. It was just Rochambeau of leg kicks. Like, two guys kicked each other in the leg back and forth until one quit. And it was honestly friggin' captivating. Like, it's the stupidest thing. It is the sort of thing that you would do if you got drunk with your buddies and were bored, and maybe you filmed it to put it on YouTube. They just made a fight promotion out of it, and I'm really here for that. And I hope you guys are too. And pretty soon they're going to put that event up on YouTube for you to go watch this past weekend. And spoiler alert, Bob Sapp shows up at the end of it. And who's not here for Bob Sapp in 2020?
Oh, my gosh. Well said, Jed. I do have a question, because I haven't got to watch it yet. I obviously got the press release about it, and I was reading it. And I was like, this just – and I'm like, why do I have to work when this is on right now? Me and Oscar Willis for the Mac Life were just like – oh, can we just reschedule this pay-per-view?
Why do I have to watch the two best flyweights in the world?
Steve made me live vlog that damn event while I was trying to watch Fight Circus.
What was women's Indian leg wrestling?
Oh, it is. So did you ever do that?
Hold on. Put this into context, the press release said there are two fitness models who will show up in the best of five Indian leg wrestling tournament. And verbatim, the press release says, "What is Indian leg wrestling? Find out soon, only at Fight Circus." So I'm like, why? I have absolutely no idea what that is. So, Jed, what was Indian leg wrestling?
I had no idea either. So do you ever do that stupid game when you're kids and you sit parallel to each other but facing the opposite way? So, like, this is you and your legs are here, you each of you lift up the leg and then you come across and try and leverage the other one over. There's just that. Yeah. Did that make sense? So they just did that for like five rounds of it until somebody won. But that's not like a cut. Like, after the first one happens, you know how the rest of them are going to go.
Yeah.
It's not like better tactics with it. Like, the person who won the first one just rolls through for another couple of times.
It should be, do you know who Saquon Barkley is, Jed?
Yeah, of course I know.
The winner. He was my number
one pick in fantasy this year. I didn't work out too well for me.
Hey, me too. High five on sadness.
Not great.
It should be like, you win, you stay, and the end game is you have to do Indian leg wrestling against Saquon Barkley.
Dude, I would watch the absolute shit out of Saquon versus like Nick Chubb in Indian leg wrestling.
Who's that cat on the Redskins? He was the number two pick. Oh my god, out of Ohio State.
Chase Young?
Yeah, man. I watch football highlights like daily during football season.
I don't think that makes you weird. I kind of think that makes you probably more normal than most of our viewership.
Yeah, you watch American, Carousel, I watch American football highlights. Yeah, and I'm like, this man is a freak of nature. Miles Garrett too would be fun. Before we let you go, Jed, any other fights that you want to see on Fight Circus? Any ideas you have that we haven't got to see yet?
Wait, who would win? We didn't answer the actual question. Who would win?
Oh, I think the two
best flyweights in the world would beat Francis.
I agree.
The question is, can they work together though? Because what if there's a low key simmering beef there, because what would really be the funniest thing in the world is if, like, very quietly, Figgy Smalls just, like, hated Demetrius for whatever reason. Was like, all right, you take left, I'll take right. And then he just doesn't go and lets Mighty Mouse just run into Francis Ngannou.
Or better yet, like, David C. Figueroa just planks real hard because he has abs are insane. And Francis Ngannou picks him up like a weapon.
Just whack. It'd be awesome.
I could see if it was Figgy and Cejudo or anyone in Cejudo. I could see flyweight like, yeah, Henry, you do that and I'll do this.
Down the river?
Yeah.
Absolutely. It'd be awesome. I'm so here for it. Beyond that, though, so they've already they're doing a Fight Circus 3. What's it called? Keep doing these forever.
What's it called?
They've thrown out ridiculous ideas that I would be here for. A fight in a bouncy castle was one of them that I heard John Nutt say. Ooh. And I, a long time ago, in the Missed Fist column that me and AK Lee do, I argued very strongly for doing a fight on a slip and slide. And I would, just because that would be hilarious. Like, it's not going to be good, but it will be funny. I'd really, really like to see that happen. That'd just be excellent.
So, kicks only, kicks only though. Slip and slide and kicks only.
Legitimately, the kick, like, so all nonsense aside, the kicking only fights that they've had in two Fight Circuses have been awesome. Like, they have been really interesting, fun fights to watch. Granted, we're not talking about like elite level competitors here, but it is very different if you're just like, oh yeah, they can't punch each other. All they can do is kick each other because there's enough diversity in attacks. Like, they did a spinning attacks only, and that didn't work out super well because you can always just back away when someone starts spinning. So it's hard to get offense generated. They need to do it in a smaller area to like make it so you just sort of have to take it or defend. But the kick only fight, like, there's such a diversity to it. It's been awesome. And like, every time the kick only fight, they call it human cockfighting. It's the best. Like, I can't wait for a kick fight only league. It's gonna be awesome.
I think they should do, I'm sure you guys have seen all the memes of when Joe Rogan talks about mixed martial arts, he's like, they should fight in a football field with no time limit, no hands, no glove wrap. So
no hands.
Yeah. Make it happen. Fight Circus. Have two people fight on a football field with no time limit and no gloves.
I'm in. That would be awesome.
I'm in. You only win by pick. You win by throwing the other person through the field goal post.
Who would win an all kicking fight? DC versus Edson Barboza.
Edson Barboza.
Oh my God, that is such a good fight.
Edson Barboza.
Oh my God, that's such a good fight.
You don't need to answer me. Just think about it all week. We'll return to it.
Who would win a kicking fight? Edson Barboza or Stefan Struve?
That's an awesome idea.
Edson Barboza versus Stefan Struve kicking contest.
I mean, I'm still just going to take Barboza, but that's...
Me too.
That's fun. Like, this is the kind of insane nonsense you get at Fight Circus. That's why I'm here for it. Because they don't have the same toys to play with. They don't have Edson Barboza. But they can just sit around and say, all right, what if we just had a really tall guy fight a really short guy, but he was never allowed to get off of his knees? Like, they could just do that. And that's probably what happened. Awesome.
You'll love to see it.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, I like the idea. Like, Edson Barboza versus DC, but Edson Barboza can only spin.
Edson Barboza DC versus Edson Barboza. Edson Barboza can only wrestle, and DC can only throw leg kicks. There you go.
Oh my God. What a fight.
What a Edson Barboza's wrestling versus DC's leg kicks would be a scrap.
Just to see Edson Barboza shoot a double on DC would be
Oh my God. Anyway, we've gone 10 minutes overtime, but that's what happens when we get on Fight Circus talk. Any other questions we have before we call it a week, Casey? I know we have.
You know, we had
Media Day coming.
We have one. Oh, yeah, I got it. Yeah, actually, one question about Saturday's fights. It's actually answer one question.
Oh, you should. Steven Ostis, why do people believe on the YouTube comments? Why do people believe UFC wants Lewis to KO Curtis? More times than not, the grappler will beat him. Also, Lewis has the clout from his hot balls run, and he could rub them on Curtis. Well, I see what you did there. I think for sure the UFC does not want Curtis Blaydes to win. Because Derek Lewis is way more marketable and way more popular. Curtis Blaydes, after his last performance against Volkov, Dana White was not happy whatsoever because Curtis Blaydes talked all that greasiness about not caring about what fans say. He just wants to win. And he went out there and just Ben Askren Volkov. Had no issues with it. Obviously wasn't the most exciting fight, but a win is a win. Absolutely dominated. And then him and Derek Lewis have a lot of beef, a lot of greasiness. Derek Lewis actually scored the fight 5-0 for Volkov. if you weren't aware.
Hey, fighters should be judges, man. That's what I keep saying. Fighters should be judges. They know what it's like to be in there.
So, Jed, does the UFC want Derek Lewis to knock out Curtis Blaydes?
Of course. For all the reasons you said. Like, that's pretty obvious. They tolerate Curtis Blaydes. They like Derek Lewis. So, Curtis Blaydes is like very, very quietly just winning enough to demand a title shot, and he's not going to get one because of where he sits behind Francis Ngannou. So, a Lewis win would kind of tidy that situation up right there for him. But they don't always get what they want, and they're not getting what they want this weekend.
I agree. Also, Curtis Blaydes is 0-2 versus Francis Ngannou. So if Francis is anywhere near a title shot, Curtis Blaydes is not going to be anywhere near a title shot.
Saying he's 0-2 against Ngannou is putting it very positive. That's the most because that was a bad 0-2. Like he took.
Yeah, he got crushed, and then he wasn't the first fight a decision.
Oh, did he make it?
Oh no, it was a doctor stoppage. It was a doctor stoppage.
Yeah,
in Croatia.
Who did Ngannou hit that like? Kimura thing on. Who the hell was that?
Yeah, it was early on, back when he had the cornrows still.
Yeah.
Yep.
Anthony Hamilton, which is exactly who I thought it would be. Before we go, because I want to clarify two things. Someone says the Spike Carlisle question, it was a fight about this weekend. Because he's fighting this weekend. And Suzanne, longtime commenter, says we haven't asked Jed the most important question. We always ask new guests. Jed, I'm sure you've heard the question before. Every time we have a new guest, we get this question asked. If you have, in a hypothetical world, a hand cannon a la Mega Man's – you know who Mega Man is, right?
Yeah, sure do.
Yeah, a la Mega Man style, and you can have one flavor of ice cream shoot out of the hand cannon to solve world hunger, what flavor are you picking? And keep in mind, it is not a continuous stream. It is one. It's like boom, boom, scoop. Boom. Yeah. Yeah. So it's not soft serve. It's scoop. It's a scoop hand cannon.
Important.
What flavor ice cream are you picking? I thought I had the correct answer, and then Israel Adesanya and Brad Riddell changed my mind when we were on Fight Island.
Can I just clarify? You asked this question to literally everybody who's first time.
Every new guest.
I can honestly say I have never once given this particular set of circumstances a thought. The goal is to cure world hunger.
Yes.
That's the target here.
That is the end goal.
Then I guess I want to be as like, do I have to pick like an actual ice cream flavor? Can I pick something?
Yeah. No, you can't. It has to be an actual flavor ice cream you can go to your local store and buy.
I mean, I'm just going to go with vanilla.
That's boring. You sound like Pizza Carol.
It's the most mundane of the choices, so I feel like that's
the answer. For a long time, I thought the answer would have to be something with a lot of like pieces in it, because it would obviously you'd fill up faster, like cookies and cream or like the Reese peanut butter one or chocolate fudge brownie. And that was my answer for a long time. And then Israel Adesanya and Brad Riddell is like, why not make it Napolitano? Because that's three flavors. In one scoop, you get vanilla, you get chocolate, and you get strawberry. I'm a big fan of strawberry, vanilla, and chocolate together. So I think that is my new answer. You get three flavors, one scoop.
I changed my mind. It's Reese's peanut butter cup.
Like, that's a good answer too. Casey, always yours. Did you say like
during world hunger, I need like peanut butter as at least a protein that you can give to people.
Yeah.
So it feels like that might be the way to go.
See, when you think about it, you do have the answer. Vanilla is the incorrect answer. You got the Casey. Didn't you say like pistachio or something? Or
I enjoy it. No, chocolate chip mint. Because I don't care about hunger. I just want to see it's like the little mint chips are like shrapnel and it'll just like give you cuts and everything, you know. Cause,
oh, so you could also use it to defend yourself.
As a weapon. Yeah.
That's smart. Smart. See, Casey.
I get to use that as a weapon regardless of what I'm shooting out of it, though.
That's that 4D chess thinking. Anyway, this has been Jose. That's Jed. That's Casey. You can find us on Spotify, YouTube, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, all that fun stuff. We'll see you next Wednesday. Stick around. Go watch Jed Meshew lose on Between the Links, and then we'll be back next week on the A-side. Peace.
Rude.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. DraftKings brings you same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. You can download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VOXMMA. That's code VOXMMA for new customers to get 150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.